Welcome to Straight and Curly,
a podcast for self-improvement junkies.
I'm Kelly Exeter.
And I'm Carly Jacobs.
This is episode 71.
Hello and welcome to Straight and Curly. This week we are tackling the topic of perfectionism. So perfectionism is a personality trait that presents in a person striving for flawlessness and setting extremely high standards for themselves. And this is often accompanied by extreme self-critiques and the searching of feedback from others. So I think a lot of people would think that Kelly and I have perfectionist tendencies. But Kel, do you reckon you're a perfectionist?
Yeah, do you know what? It's funny because I never ever thought I was, because I thought perfectionists were like literally perfectionistic about everything. Like they had to be perfect at everything. And I was like, there was heaps in life I was happy to be half-assed about.
Yeah, same.
But then it's interesting because when I was researching my second book, Practical Perfection, I discovered actually there are three subscales of perfectionism, and actually like there's no kind of designated like this is what perfectionism is. There's lots of different models of it, but this is kind of the one that resonated with me because I saw this in myself and other people. So there's three types. There's a self-oriented perfectionist who adheres to strict standards while maintaining strong motivation to attain perfection and avoid failure. They also engage in stringent self-evaluation. Then there are other oriented perfectionists who set unrealistic standards for significant others, partners, children, co-workers, coupled with a stringent evaluation of those people's performances. And I
like tiger moms.
Yeah, and like I strongly suspect that my husband has a touch of that in him, just quietly. Okay. And then there's socially prescribed perfectionists who kind of believe that others hold realistic – so they don't hold themselves to unrealistic expectations – but they believe others hold unrealistic expectations for them that they can't live up to, but they really, really feel that external pressure to be perfect because they're believing that people are constantly evaluating them critically. And it's funny, someone in the group kind of said, oh, I think there's a bit of a correlation between like, you know, Gretchen Rubin's types and those three things that you just said. And I was like, you know what? I agree, because I do think that upholders have the highest potential to be self-oriented perfectionists.
Yeah.
Questioners have a high possibility of being an other-oriented perfectionist, and obligers have a high possibility of being a socially prescribed perfectionist, whereas like they feel other people hold them to high standards and they're desperately trying to meet those standards. So I do agree, but I had to kind of laugh at Megan who said that she's got a touch of all three, and I was like, oh, my God, that is tough. I personally am definitely a self-oriented perfectionist, so I do hold myself to very, very high standards and then, yeah, do everything I can to maintain high standards despite knowing that they're unrealistic. And it's taken a lot of work over the years to kind of just cut back on that, and that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. And I have to admit there's a bit of socially prescribed perfectionism in there for me as well. But yeah, Carl, you don't think you're a perfectionist, which is so interesting to me.
Yeah, I actually don't think I am, because I hadn't actually thought of it before. I've definitely self-identified as a perfectionist in the past, and a lot of the stuff that I write about and comment on Smaggle is about perfectionism. I also self-identify as having a type A personality, which I actually think is different.
Oh yeah, definitely. Type A's are just like, yeah, they're just driven. Perfunctory. And gotta,
they just get shit done. Like it's, and that's not based on a, I'll hate myself if I don't do this thing. It's based on a, I want to do this thing, so I'm
to
going
do it.
To
yeah.
kind of a thing. I think what I am is a high-functioning person with a very low tolerance for incompetence. So I think that's sort of where I sit on that.
I think so you have high potential to be an other-oriented perfectionist where you set unrealistic expectations for other people. I'm not saying that you do,
actually,
but
yeah.
I think that's what you would have a high potential for.
But the thing is, Kelly, is that I don't think my expectations are unrealistic. I'm like, how about you don't push in the line at the deli at the supermarket? And also, how about you repark your car if it is over the line in the car park? And, you know, Maybe put things in the dishwasher is another one. Although I'm a bit shit like that, and that was not aimed at Ben. He's wonderful at putting things in the dishwasher. But sometimes I just see people do things, and I'm like, "What are you doing? What? How do you make it through the day? I don't understand you."
That's like my father-in-law. He's living with us at the moment. And admittedly, he is not doing this. But when we used to live with him, he used to do it all the time. He would leave a dish on the counter directly above the dishwasher, and I was I just don't understand it. It's like right there.
Just open you're basically the thing and just done put it. In. Like, I just don't understand. No. So, for instance, like if I'm going to a friend's house and it's their birthday and I'm in charge of making the cake, I'll find one of those ridiculous freak cakes on Pinterest and buy 4 cake tins and spend all afternoon trying to make this amazing thing. And inevitably it will be one of my mate bloggers cakes that I'm making. So generally I have, because I'm friends with Lorraine from Not Quite Nigella, and I've actually I've called her on Saturday afternoons and been like, I can't make your cake work. And she's like, this isn't the way blogging works, Carly. You can't just call me and be like, I'm like, man, it's not working. But having said that, I'll improvise, I'll try to fix it. And if it's not working, I'll move on and I'll improvise. Whereas a perfectionist would freak out, probably let it ruin their afternoon and get really increased stress levels over it. I genuinely don't give a shit about stuff like that. So, which is incredibly unperfectionist of me. But again, with the other orientated perfectionist thing, I suspect I might have a little bit of that in me. I think it's low level most of the time, but I am very practical to a fault. So particularly I was actually talking to Kelly about something unrelated before we started recording the podcast today. And I'm very not backwards in coming forwards, and Kelly's just such a really beautiful, even, even when I think I'm being right, as you guys would know in the how to get your opinion across without being a dick, I'm firmly in the camp of just be a dick. So Kelly comes across and she's just like, oh, maybe think about this, maybe think about that. But I'm often quite staunch in that I'm right, and I'm not very good at seeing where other people are coming from if I've convinced myself to the point of no return that I'm correct, which is only probably about 5% of the time. But when that happens, I'm definitely other oriented perfectionist. I'll be like, why are you not being the best at this?
Why are you not living up to my expectations? They're quite reasonable.
Exactly. They are very reasonable.
And it's funny what you say there about being practical, because this is what gets me about the and do you know what I noticed the other day? I was talking to someone about how much I loathe conflict and how it's very triggering.
You loathe conflict more than anyone I think I've ever met. You just back away. You're like, no.
Definitely my first.
But Kelly.
I just want to run like my first response. Like, because I'm an adult, I've learned that you can't run from it, but it just freaks me out. And do you know what? I actually kind of realized the other day, to me, conflict arises from poor communication. And what conflict to me has come about because I have been imperfect at communication, and I always see it as my fault. Like, I'm like, if I had just communicated something to someone better, or if I had just read their mind better, anticipated what they were thinking, and then addressed that in my communications with them, we would not be in this situation today, which of course – It's
silly, because communication's a two-way street, and it is straight up the other person's responsibility to communicate with you as well.
I know, and that's it. And so if there's one area in which, I've gotten on top of perfectionism in pretty much all other areas, because the other area that I used to be ridiculous about was in meeting people's expectations. And if I wasn't sure what they were, I would just go way, way, way above it, which of course is ridiculous because not sustainable. So I did that in my work life, and – so then you set the bar so, so high that, because you can't just keep jumping, making these major jumps above the bar that you set for yourself. So I realized how stupid and unsustainable that was, but I still can't quite let go of it from a communication point of view, but I am working on it.
I'm quite similar though, because that just reminded me when you said criteria. I was a criteria junkie in uni, and when you would have a lecturer and they would give you your assessment criteria, I loved it because I would just go through and tick every box and make sure everything was included in the essay. I did very well at uni because I did exactly what was expected of me, and I would love it if you could have criteria for relationships with people and communication with people, because I would just own it. Like, if every person that I met I should just get them to send me a cheat sheet of ways of my to expectations have effective of you.
Because it's all expectations, isn't it? Like, yeah. This is what I found with my job when I was working for Flying Solo. Like, it was the best job ever because the expectations were so, so clear. And because I'm that person that always has to deliver above expectations, like, and that is my thing, and I can fight against it, and I do to a certain degree. But if the expectations are like super, super clear, what that allows me to do is deliver just slightly above it. So then I'm happy. Of course, they're happy. And the goalposts aren't moving all over the place. It's just when the expectations are unclear. So then I completely overcompensate just to be sure. That's when
you are an overcompensator.
That is when things really, really go to shit. So I guess, like, we've spoken a little bit about how perfectionism manifests. Like, what are the problems with perfectionism? Because it sounds great, like, doesn't it? It sounds like, wow, you have to be really, you set really high standards and live up to them. That sounds like a really bad way to live, but it is, isn't it?
It is. It's not great. So, like, my perfectionism presents itself really lamely. Like, for instance, I used to work in a newsagent and my job was facing the products. That's where you get all of the lollies and chocolates and make sure they're all in rows. It was just, like, the greatest job ever. I loved it. So unless a newsagent has really decent staff, if I'm in a newsagent and I'm, like, waiting in line, I'll just start just straightening the lollies while I'm standing there. And there's also a prescribed way of laying out magazines that the publishers pay for. I'm sure that it has changed now, but Woman's Day always had to go under new idea, and that was the law. Yeah, like, right. You had to do that. And so now if Woman's Day is, like, at the other end of the thing, I'm like, but I just want to move it because it belongs under new idea. And I can't do it because I don't know the rules anymore. I haven't worked in a newsagent for 10 years. But it's still just following rules is just so ingrained in me, and I'm very bad at not doing it. But again, we were saying before that perfectionism seems like a really great thing, and the byproduct of that is being organized and you know, having things done on time, but it can actually be a really awful thing. And sometimes people will wear it as a badge, or it's often used as, like, a ridiculous lie in job interviews. Like, when people are asked what their biggest flaw is, and people will be like, well, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and you just, it's not a great thing. And another problem is that it can be quite destructive, and it can lead to depression and anxiety. So there's a study that I found when researching for this podcast today, and it shows that the words high standards and perfectionist were often used to describe 70% of young men that killed themselves in a test group of 33 families of suicide. We'll link to the study in the show notes. So it's actually really not a joke or really something to strive for. It can be extremely detrimental, and those kind of perfectionist tendencies and words are often linked to people with very severe mental health issues. Perfectionists are also less likely to talk through their problems because they want to appear as though they have their shit together. So perfectionists tend to bury their feelings instead of talking about them. And as I just said that, I realized that is a very perfectionist tendency of mine. We both do that. Kelly and I are buriers. Like, if we're having a tough time, we bury and then we talk about it. Like, we both had a really bad week last week when we were recording, and we didn't say anything because we were both in the thick of it. We touched on it very briefly, but then we both backed away. And then recording today,
we're just like, blah.
All of it's passed. Yeah. And so before we recorded today, we were just like, blah, 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 blah. So that's a very perfectionistic thing, talking about things later.
I think that's something that will resonate a lot with people who are listening to the show, is that that's a very, very insidious thing, where if you catch yourself not being able to tell people, like, oh, you know, I've had a bit of a bad day, or, and I'm talking, like, kind of pathologically, not like just, you know, on a one-off thing, but yeah, for a very long time, like, my personal brand was, I mean, my personal brand is still as someone who has their shit together, but for a very long time, I could not admit to anybody that I was really struggling if I was, because that's not my personal brand. My personal brand is Kelly has her shit together. And if I admit that I don't, then what will people think of me? Like, I'm past that now because I've done, like, 6 years of hard work to get past it. But I catch a lot of people in that mode of, like, this is who people think I am, and who am I if I'm not this person? And it's like, you're still that person. Like, you are still the person who has their shit together, but nobody has their shit together 100% of the time. And we have to get comfortable with that. And also, we're not doing another, it's kind of like a soapbox thing of mine, like we're not doing each other any favors by putting forward this face that we always have it together, even when we don't, because all we're doing is we're not giving other people permission to not have it together, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I really love that, like, that you touched on the concept of a person's personal brand. I think a lot of people have a persona that they've created for themselves that they want other people to see them as. And we both have very similar personal brands, very much Carly has her shit together, Kelly has her shit together. I think the opposite can be true of a lot of people as well, where they have developed a personal brand for themselves where they're, you know, a bit hopeless and, you know, they're a bit kind of, oh, I left the house without shoes on again. And people go, oh, you. I think that people can create narratives around themselves that aren't necessarily true. So we have, I mean, the people who listen to Straight and Curly are just the most wonderful, high-functioning, incredible people. And when they come to us with problems, it's generally at the moment I'm feeling this way. But I've had readers on the blog before that have come up and been like, oh, I don't know, I'm just really disorganized and I lose things all the time. And, you know, everyone calls me Forgetful Sally. You actually have the power to change that narrative.
If you want to, yeah. If you're not too, you know, because you do have to be careful about the narrative that you're wedded to and how tied up you are in that level of, you know, that sense of your identity. But also just know you don't always have to be that person. Like, it's not like someone lay down this story for you and now you are obliged to continue to walk that path. Like, we all have the ability to step off that path. And I mean, like I said, like with, you know, me setting ridiculous standards for myself, and like, I mean, I had to, and people in the group mentioned this as well, you know, a lot of us have to push all the way to burnout before we go, okay, isn't this ridiculous that we hold ourselves to these standards? And again, one of my life goals is for people to not have to push all the way to burnout before they go, oh, hang on, this path that I'm on is not sustainable. Like, let's do something about it ahead of time. And so certainly when it comes to managing perfectionism, one of the very first things you can do is learn to recognize that you're doing it. And it's something really interesting that I found in writing Practical Perfection and in calling the book Practical Perfection is that many people who are perfectionists or have perfectionist tendencies don't actually self-identify as perfectionists, which was not great for the book, because then first you have to sell to people the idea that no, actually you do have perfectionist tendencies. Just because you're not perfect at everything doesn't mean that you don't have these tendencies. But yeah, that's quite interesting to me that a lot of people actually don't self-identify, even though it shouldn't be interesting to me, because I myself did not self-identify as a perfectionist until I read this book and went, oh, sorry, read this book, did the research and went, oh, duh.
At the beginning of this podcast, I didn't, and now we're doing it and I'm thinking that I may well be.
And it's just tendencies, as I said, like you are not a perfectionist. It's you have perfectionist tendencies, and there's something called healthy perfectionism and then there's neurotic perfectionism. And there's, you know, so say like with regards to goals, like healthy perfectionism, you feel positively motivated by your goals. There's a sense of excitement and joy as you work towards them. Whereas, you know, neurotic perfectionism is you feel weighed down by your goals and you're fearful about what if you don't succeed. So I do think like you probably are more on the healthy side of perfectionism. Like you use it to drive you forward. Whereas, and I've certainly used it to drive me forward in certain elements of my life, but in other elements of my life, I use it as a self-flagellation tool, kind of, you know, I can't believe you didn't mind read that person was going to think that, and therefore say something about it to avoid this conflict that you've just had with them, you know, like so dumb. So obviously dumb when you say it.
And then overthinking it on top of that as
well. Exactly.
Which is super fun. So how does perfectionism manifest itself? So there's a few ways that it can do it, and it will just list those through, and you can see if there are any red flags there of things that you might be doing a little bit too much of. None of this means that you are actually a perfectionist, and some of it is just regular everyday stuff that you're doing to sabotage yourself anyway. But these are just some things to look out for if this is happening in excess in your life. So the first one is procrastination. With perfectionism, a lot of people will put off doing a task because they're waiting for the particular perfect time to do it. I do that a lot.
A lot of people who want to write books do that. They wait till the day that they can go and lock themselves in a little cabin in the woods, Carls. You don't need the cabin in the woods. You just write. Just start writing anywhere. It doesn't matter. there's no perfect time or place to do these things. You just literally have to start. But procrastination is definitely a massive red flag. It's more like if you look at why you're procrastinating, and as soon as you catch yourself going, it's just not the right time, or it's, and if you catch yourself saying that a lot, then yeah, there's a bit of perfectionism tied up in what you're about to do. It's funny that perfectionism is one of the biggest productivity killers out there. So if we're talking about being an effective human being, a lot of stuff that you and I talk about is productivity based, like perfectionism kills productivity like nothing else. And actually in the group, so Jessica said, because she says she's a lawyer, and she said, you know, and she's that lawyers bill in 6-minute increments, and she's saying her billings get affected because she's not willing to accept good enough. She has to make it completely, completely right. You know, so that's a big deal for, you know, if you're a lawyer, you definitely don't get to be perfectionistic. But just in general, like there's so much stuff. Like we'll spend time finessing, like, you know, font sizes and colors and all kinds of stuff, like in a presentation that we're doing or a website. And at the end of the day, we're the only ones that care. All the people looking at that thing don't, and we've just spent far longer on it than we need to. So it's a really inefficient way to go about things. Being perfectionist, I think, like, if you want to be perfectionistic, you are a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist or a, you know, fighter jet pilot or something. There's just not too many, you know, or a nurse, obviously. Anyone in a medical profession, please be perfectionistic. But for the vast majority of us, no one's going to die if we get something slightly wrong. So you just have to ask yourself, like, why am I finessing this to the nth degree? Like, I just got to get it out there. And actually, Tammy also mentioned that she fails to ship quite often, as in get products out, because she, you know, is trying to get, you know, get them done perfectly. And I guess anybody who, you know, works in the internet world knows that you're much better just getting the product out there and finding out if someone will pay for it, rather than spending 6 months working on this thing, making it perfect, getting it out there and going, oh, oops, exactly, no one wants it. Like, definitely no room for perfectionism in the internet world.
Well, that's the thing. Like, this brings me to the being unnecessarily thorough and taking too long to do something one. And it's the same with blogging. I teach blogging, and I've been a part of the blogging community for 10 years. I've written 3 to 5 articles per week for the last decade, no breaks the entire time. And a lot of people ask me, you know, how do you do that? And I just do it. Like, a lot of people will say, oh, but it'll take me 8 hours to write one blog post. And my response to that is, that's too long. You just don't need to spend that much time on it. I mean, it's, unless it's going to be, you know, your life's work, but even then, a blog post taking 8 hours, that's definitely, and you know, back in the day I used to do that, but now, no way, man, I just knock them out. Like, you just have to go bang, bang, bang. Perfectionism can also manifest itself in anxiety and depression, that they're very, very heavily linked. There's lots of research on people who have mental health issues displaying perfectionism tendencies, that kind of thing. There's so much research on it. Yeah, so if you want to delve in that direction, we're just touching on it very, very lightly. Overthinking is another huge one, which we all love doing in the Straight and Curly group. Basically, the fear that you can't make the wrong decision and that would be the worst thing in the world. This comes up a lot when people present us with problems like, oh, I've got, you know, I've been offered 2 jobs and I don't know which one to take. Most of the time you actually do know which one to take, and there's definite pros and cons of both, but one will almost always outweigh the other. And the reason why you're not making your decision is because you're overthinking making the wrong decision rather than trusting that you're making
and
the right one.
It's funny, I'm writing a blog post at the moment on this very topic of that I think the title is going to be like, what if I'm wrong? And the title is, and I guess the gist behind that is, what if you are? You'll fix it, or you'll learn from it, or you'll move on, or you'll go and make the right decision next time. Like, exactly what you just said. We spend far too much time focusing on the what if I get it wrong, rather than, you know, I'm going to make this right, or this is, you know, this is the way to go, or both these ways are awesome, so either one's going to work really well for me.
Exactly. It's not a binary thing a lot of the time. It's, you're not choosing the correct thing over the incorrect thing. You are choosing to walk down one path instead of another path, which is a completely legitimate thing and something you do every day without even really knowing that you're doing it. Another way it manifests itself is in self-doubt and constantly questioning yourself, and also having a loss of perspective. I've got a really good one for this, because because I am very logical and I don't make very many feelings-based decisions, sometimes everything I do is based on fact and the best outcome from the data that I have in every given situation. And now I sound like a robot. But sometimes I lose a bit of perspective and I need to speak to someone like Kelly, or I need to speak to someone who actually has feelings, say, hey, here's the situation. Can you help me with this? Because I do constantly question myself but particularly being so logical and not having a lot of feelings involved in a lot of my decisions, I'm often on my own. Because a lot, other people have feelings and they consider them in their decision making. And I'll be sitting here on my little logical box being like, but this makes no sense. Why are we even talking about this? So it's actually really good to have those moments of self-doubt and seek out opposite people who can add a bit of perspective to the things that you think you've lost perspective on. Yeah,
definitely. And I think, so we've kind of talked about the costs of perfectionism. So if we talk about managing it, I've already mentioned the first thing we all need to do is recognize when we're doing it. And the second thing is we really, really, really have to embrace done is better than good. And I'm talking about perfectionism of task-based perfectionism, where we're working on something and we're finessing it and understand that the finessing of something is a form of procrastination in itself. And sometimes you just need to be able to step back and look at your own behavior and go, why am I spending 2 hours moving this thing 1 millimeter back and forth? What am I doing? And the thing is, normally that you're scared. You're scared of putting it out in the world and you're scared of it failing. And there's a lot of fear wrapped up in perfectionistic behavior. And you just have to kind of catch yourself. And then this is just a self-awareness thing. Catch yourself doing it. Just step back for a sec and go, okay, why am I doing this? Why am I procrastinating on this thing? Or why am I spending, an extra 2 hours just, going through fonts when, the Lato font will do, So catch yourself out doing it and then just kind of do a little bit of an investigation of the behavior. And once you've identified, it's kind of like naming something. Once you've named something, you're like, okay, now that I know what I'm doing, which is procrastinating because I'm being perfectionistic, now I can do something about that. So I do think that's a healthy way to come about it. And another one, Carls?
I think it's important to understand the things you notice are not the things that other people notice. For instance, us stuffing up things in the podcast. So there are things where we'll listen back and freak out about things, and it's not something that
it just doesn't come up. No one mentions it.
Doesn't come up. It's just not a thing.
Yeah, it is so often where I'll go, oh my God, I just rambled for 2 minutes on that thing, and I can't believe I didn't cut that out. And then, like I said, nobody ever cares. And there's so many things that you care about because you're in it, or you're the person whose standards are needing to be met. And you've got to understand, I guess, that other people's standards are very, very seldom in line with your own. So, and on that, one big thing that I did get to when I was writing the Practical Perfection is I kind of got to the end and I was like, you know what? The interesting thing here is that the opposite of perfectionism isn't imperfection, or it isn't even letting your standards drop. It isn't consciously going, I must set my standards lower. It's actually self-compassion, which is, there's a time and a place to hold yourself to really high standards. And that's, healthy perfectionism is when you're striving and you're setting yourself goals, and goals should be achievable, but they should also be a little bit out of reach, because then you need to stretch yourself. In order for a goal to be achieved and to be satisfying, it needs to stretch you. But self-compassion is having the ability to go, you know what? What you're asking of yourself right now, given all the other things going on in your life, you're asking yourself too much. So if I was training for a marathon earlier this year, and there was just a lot of stuff going on in various aspects of my life. And what I was doing is I was going for a long run on the weekend, 2.5 hours, and then I'd come home and I'd stand in the pool for half an hour, as an ice bath. And then the kids would want to be going to parks. I'd be like, okay, I can do this. I can go to the park. And I'd be going to the park and I'd be all tired while I'm at the park. And then I'd come home in the afternoon and I'd have a 2 hour sleep. And I was just like, you know what? Asking yourself, and it was because I was like, I'm an athlete. I'm an ex-athlete. My kids are done being, babies. It's time for me to be an athlete again. I'm going to run a marathon. I'm going to do this. And in the end, I had to go, hang on a minute. This thing that you're asking yourself to do is incompatible with your life and the way that you want to live right now. It's not that way forever, but just right at this moment in time. just be a little bit kind to yourself. And what did I do? I just dialed it back. I didn't do the marathon. I did the half marathon. Much better, much more sustainable. It can be seen as, oh, well, you let your standards for yourself drop. And it's like, actually, no, it was just being realistic about, of all the things I'm trying to achieve right now, I can't do all of them. So that's, I guess, another thing is be selective about what you're going to, because I do think it's hard for us to not be perfectionistic about anything. So just choose like two things and go, these are the things I'm going to be really anal and hold myself to stupid standards about, but everything else in my life, like I've learned that with communication, like slowly over the years, I have come to accept that I can't read people's minds. It's taken 40 years, but I've finally come to that conclusion that it's not realistic to expect that of myself. Thank you so much for listening to Straight and Curly. This week's show notes and links will be available at straightandcurly.com. We also have an incredible Facebook group full of fellow self-improvement junkies. So if that's you too, come join us at facebook.com/groups/straightandcurly.
And if you have any questions or weird self-improvement hacks you want us to trial, you can tweet us at Kelly Exeter or at Smaggle, or you can email us at hello@straightandcurly.com.
Jackrabbit FM.
For your ears.
Who is that?